It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North convenience stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, good to be with you, Payne and Pendergast. We will get to acknowledge me in about 20 minutes. You know there will be Cougs will be in there. Got some Astros in there as well. A whole lot more we'll get to. We acknowledge big performances and noteworthy things from over the weekend at 7:20-ish every Monday. EJ Speed signs with the Texans 1 year, up to $5 million bucks. Base value is $3.2 million. He's got some per-game bonuses and things like that. This is a one-year prove-it deal for a guy who has been in the league 7 years. His first 5 years, he was largely a special teamer for the Colts. And then when Shaquille Leonard... when his career started to go sideways with injuries, EJ Speed got his shot. He got a 2-year extension with the Colts a couple years ago, and he played 98% of the snaps for them last year.
It was his first 4 seasons, he was a situational player, and then the last 2 years, he's had 26 starts. He's going into his 7th year. And I think the big thing was that when he was playing situationally, 300, 400 snaps per year, they used him really effectively. When he became an every down starter, he's shown more of his blemishes. And the big question would be, all right, does D'Amico, even though you're talking about a 7th-year veteran, I feel like there is upside here. He's very athletic. He is very fast. You have no choice but to be fast when your last name is Speed, because otherwise it's embarrassing.
Yes.
And he makes a lot of plays in the backfield. He's a really good run defender. It's just that athleticism doesn't translate to pass coverage. So yet again, whether you're talking about Christian Harris 2 years ago, Blake Cashman when he was here, any of these guys, can you get the best version of a guy that hasn't been a marquee starter? And I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued. I would not predict that he's going to be a starter.
Yeah.
But he certainly has the physical potential to do so if he really latches on to D'Amico's scheme. It's going to be a genuine competition for whoever starts next to Aziz Altair.
So are we getting the best version of EJ Speed, or are we getting Kamu Grugier Speed? Is what I'm hearing you say right now.
Yeah. Like that's, yeah, Kamu Grugier.
A lot of flashy plays in the backfield. Yeah.
Well, and he's exactly, I feel like a lot of Texans fans probably know EJ Speed because he'll show up with some big plays in critical moments. He'll get a tackle for a loss, they'll mm-hmm. blitz him, and he'll get a sack, whatever it might be. It's just a matter of consistency. So there is potential there, and this is a classic prove-it deal. He was out there on the market forever. I'm not bashing the guy or anything. I mean, the market was what it was. He signs a 1-year, $5 million deal because he hasn't really shown that he can be a genuine 3-down linebacker.
Yeah.
But I do like, if he doesn't start, I still think he plays a bunch. And DeMeco finds a way to get that speed on the field, now, especially in perhaps run situations.
If I'm a defensive lineman or a linebacker, and I'm at the stage of my career where I feel like I got a lot in the tank, but the market doesn't feel like I have a lot in the tank, and I got to go prove myself somewhere, at either of those two positions, I'm doing what I can to come to the Houston Texans. You know, it doesn't work out for everybody. You know, Devin White came here last year. You know, he got waived and he got picked up, and maybe he thought that he'd revamp his career here. Didn't work out for him. But Blake Cashman's a great example of a guy. They trade a day three pick for him because they think he'd be a good fit here. They bring him in, and it turns out not only is he a great fit as a special teamer, he's a great fit as an every down linebacker for them. You know, he's turning guys over and whatnot. But I would, especially at those two positions, particularly, Seth, if I was a prove it guy, I would want to come play for DeMeco Ryans.
Yeah, and I think the difference with Devin White is that Devin White came in and really flashed, and he has freakish athletic ability. It just wasn't always clear that he had any interest in playing his responsibilities. With EJ Speed, I don't know. He's not the same type of athlete as Devin White, but he does show up and make plays. He's just got to be more consistent in pass coverage. And maybe his linebackers coach for the last 3 years has been Richard Smith, former Texans defensive coordinator. I only knew him as a defensive coordinator, and he was not very good at all. I don't know as a linebackers coach whether he's as good as the Texans defensive coaches.
Yeah. We'll
I would see. Guess no.
Yeah.
So they might be able to unlock a different version of EJ Speed.
Yeah, that makes sense. So the big question we've gotten about EJ Speed, other than wondering what the issue with Christian Harris, like, if does this have anything to do with concern about Christian Harris? Let's address that first before we get to CJ Stroud. Because the competition in that room, like Azeez Alshire, as you point, he's a captain, he's going to start. It's really a competition between Christian Harris, Henry Toa and EJ Speed. If they're playing a lot of the defense, the formation, the scheme that they were playing last year, they played most of the year last year with just two linebackers on the field.
Yeah. So, well, and that's the other thing. I think that he gives you an option to play with three linebackers. EJ Speed does.
Yeah.
If you look at it realistically, okay, look at last year. Azeez Alshire missed games with injuries and suspension. Henry Toa missed three games with a concussion. And Christian Harris missed 78 games, it felt like.
Yeah.
He missed almost the entire preseason and most of the regular season. By the time he came back at the end of the year, I don't think he was effective just after having that long, long injury. So I don't know what his injury status is and if he's completely recovered from whatever his mysterious calf injury was. But you saw that they had to play last year at various times with Jake Hansen as you're getting a bunch of reps.
Yeah.
They need more bodies in there. This team averages, since DeMeco Ryans got here, at least one unsportsmanlike suspension by a linebacker per year.
Mm.
You know,
do you think Speed could be the designated suspendee this year? Is that why he was brought in, you think?
No, I think that they expect somebody to get suspended for unsportsmanlike. I guess the leader in the clubhouse would be Azeez Alshire.
Yeah, I thought about it. It's funny. I was thinking about that. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was thinking about that this morning, and Azeez would seem to be the chalk on something like that just based on, A, he's been suspended before, and B, style of play. I wonder, and I hope this isn't the case. I hope he's still playing with reckless abandon. But the next suspension for Azeez Alshire might be a big one. You know, like he may be trying to, you know, try his best to play an Azeez style of ball, but remain suspension free. You know, like a sugar free version of Azeez Alshire.
Well, some of the stuff that led to the league making that ridiculous statement that they did was okay. It was fueled by valid concerns about some of the stuff that was kind of, you know, the punch on the sideline in the Bears game, the hit out of bounds the week before. That's stuff that he can control.
Yes, that's true.
You just flat out can't allow
we hope.
That. It's a bad example to set for the younger players when you're a captain.
Yeah.
You know, the punch on the sideline, the hit laid out of bounds, I guess maybe continuing the confrontation after the Jaguars game, all of that. Yeah, he's got to dial that back. I don't know, Henry Toa. But now it does seem, I mean, Henry Toa getting flagged for that illegal hit on Pat Mahomes, which was bogus.
Totally
in
bogus.
The playoffs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the Texans are under scrutiny.
They got a target on their back. They got a target on their back. They have a rep. Exactly. The other thing we've been getting asked a lot about, like, hey, isn't this the guy that had a little back and forth with CJ Stroud during the offseason heading into 2024? And the answer would be absolutely. He and Zaire Franklin were the two podcasting linebackers. Is this the Is this the dissipation, the end of the podcasting linebacker podcast?
Yeah, well, and I think, I don't know if Zaire Franklin's even going to do it anymore. Just because, remember, so Zaire Franklin, at a point earlier in the season, or maybe it was during training camp last year, on his podcast, it said something like, you get to the end of the year, you want to be able to, you know, beat the garbage teams like the Giants.
Oh, yeah.
And lo and behold, that surfaces at the end of the year. Zaire Franklin's statement about beating the garbage teams like the Giants when they face the Giants.
Yeah.
So I just shuffling around Colts Twitter this weekend. Zaire Franklin, not a popular person in Indianapolis.
No.
He's, people like point to the podcasting linebackers as one of the biggest disappointments last year.
So EJ Speed was one of them. And so EJ Speed and Zaire Franklin were talking a little bit of trash about CJ Stroud. We'll get to EJ Speed himself here in just a second. But here was CJ on the $1 Million Worth of Game podcast when he was asked about the trash talking Colts linebackers.
Like my boy EJ Speed, but it's a ton of dudes. It's not just EJ. He with my agent, and I tell him this to his face. I ain't tripping. But, like, a lot of dudes come to these podcasts, like, oh, yeah, I'm coming to hit. I'm going to hit CJ in his face. I'm going to get him next year. Why don't you do something? Like, where I'm from, we say, why don't you ain't do something where you was mad at? You was mad right there, my do something.
Right.
You could have made hella plays, bro. You could have made plays, dog. Right. You could have shut me up right there, but you didn't.
Right.
So what make you think you're going to do it now? And right. If you do, I'm going to come back, bro, for real. I'm feeling like this ain't for no play, bro. I'm on, like, yeah. Come on,
got
man.
Him, got him in that mode.
Got him,
yeah,
got him, bro. But you know what I'm saying? It's like, this is the mode I've been waiting to get. He's like, I'm going to slam CJ on his head. Ah, like,
man.
You should have did that then, bro.
Right.
Now we're going to have another opportunity, and we played him first game of the year. Ooh. I'm excited. The Colts. Yeah. We're playing at their place. It's going to be rocking. Indy hates me already, and I love it.
Okay, so that podcast took place well into the offseason, because they knew what the schedule was already. Yeah.
Yeah. But CJ says it at the beginning. He and EJ Speed are friends. Yeah. It's not. There was a lot of social. And look, I think people in both Indianapolis and Houston are, you know, looking at the end of the season, I think both fan bases are kind of like, all right, you know, we don't necessarily need all this beefing in the offseason on camera and everything.
On either side. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, EJ Speed and Zaire Franklin in that first game versus the Colts, those guys had. They had bad games. Remember the first two games of the year, the Colts were on pace to let up like a country mile in rushing yards.
Yeah.
And they got it together, and EJ Speed played a really good stretch for a while. He's really good against the run. He's just not very good in pass coverage.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was I'm gonna miss that a little bit. I think Zaire Franklin, if anything, is gonna come out more angry than ever. So that part of it'll still be a grudge match in the Colts games.
Yep. Yeah, and Zaire's still on the Colts, so he's still there for CJ to go after. Here was EJ Speed. This is after CJ did that podcast we just heard. Here was EJ Speed on with Kay Adams talking about CJ's trash talk.
What is the bone? What is the bone to pick? Because you know you have them week one in Indy. They're coming.
They said I didn't make any plays, so I guess I gotta put the proof in the pudding, huh?
Yeah, and CJ Stroud likes to talk.
Yeah, that's his thing now. That's his thing. He liked to pop his. I mean, can we say that he got a right to?
Yeah. Well, he's not doing it as much this offseason as he was last offseason.
If I remember that Kay Adams interview, she did him a little bit dirty. I think she also took some comment that CJ had directed towards Zaire Franklin and basically made it sound like she was talking about EJ.
Oh, okay.
And this was it wasn't always this way.
Yeah.
Last year, in 2023, I think this was at the end of the 2023 season, or maybe during it, when CJ was a rookie and the Colts had played him twice. This was EJ Speed talking about rookie quarterback CJ Stroud.
He won't even be looking at the read, and then you know he got about one more look before it get ugly for him. And then he look at your guy, and you didn't plaster like, got your ass. And then this motherfucker look somewhere else and throw the ball for a completion. You like that.
That's what I like about CJ the
most.
That's
your third read. You know how degrading that is for a quarterback to hit his third read?
It's degrading. Yeah. I don't know. I think that, like CJ had said in that first soundbite, they're friends off the field.
Yeah.
Now, I can't even remember the name of the school, EJ. He's a good story. He was a fifth-round pick out of
Tarleton State.
Tarleton State.
Yep.
That's right.
Yep.
So he's kind of picked himself up by his bootstraps as an NFL player.
No doubt.
And was a situational guy and a good special teams player. I think you're still going to see that out of him. I got excited about this simply because I do think it adds another element of athleticism and playmaking to a defense that's already on its way to being really good. But then if he can get that glow up from D'Amico Ryans, I think he can actually, there's untapped potential there mm-hmm. for him to be a complete three down linebacker.
Yeah.
But at the very least, if he's used for 300, 400 snaps per year, you're going to see him and he's going to show up.
Payne and Pendergast with you on a Monday. So that's, yeah, that's the breakdown on EJ Speed. We'll see. Going to be a fun competition at that linebacker spot.
I've seen this comment a couple times now. People are saying that Toa Toa has concussion issues. He's only had one concussion in the NFL. I wonder if people think maybe because he's kind of a kamikaze out there that if he's had one concussion, he's going to end up getting another one.
Hey,
That's valid, I guess, except that he only, for whatever it's worth, it's not like this has been a long-running issue unless I'm forgetting. And I searched for my blind spots. I only found the one last year where he missed three
Yeah,
games.
Maybe it's just the recency of the one last year. We'll see. Yeah, text in, though. I mean, if you followed him at Alabama or at Tennessee before that, maybe we're missing one here.
Alabama, he had some kind of an orthopedic injury that he played through where his dad did some kind of religious incantation over him. And,
like a Mr. Miyagi thing where he rubbed his hands together?
Some kind of oil or some kind of holy oil or something. I think they're LDS. I'm not sure.
Okay.
And he was like, it was questionable or he was doubtful to play and he ended up playing and having a really good game.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Score one for the you know, whatever the methodology is there for them, the Mr. Miyagi methodology.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. This was a throwaway comment. It felt like on a podcast with Nate Tice and his dad, Mike Tice. Mike Tice, the former coach of the Vikings, longtime offensive line coach in the NFL, an offensive lineman himself in the league. His son Nate works for The Athletic, does a podcast, a football podcast for The Athletic, does a good job. This was just sort of a throwaway comment where I heard the name Cam Robinson. I'm like, okay, I feel, you know, because I think there's some, there's two sides to the Cam Robinson signing. You know, there's the one side where you look at a lot of the advanced stats and it's like, all right, well, this guy's not very good at protecting the passer at all. And then I think there's the other side, which is if you watch him, you go, okay, well, there's definitely something there, but there's a reason why he was available on a one-year deal at this stage of free agency. Here was Nate Tice talking about Robinson going from the Jags to the Vikings midway through last season.
There was a guy this year, Cam Robinson. He was with the Jags. They traded him to the Vikings, and they taught different techniques, and you could see how that really messed with him midseason. So that's interesting, too, with the angles and everything.
Okay, so there's my excuse. You know what? Now I'm pro on the camera. He got screwed by the changes that he had to experience.
It really, that was my feeling with this signing, was that, you know, he's been a solid left tackle for the Jaguars for a long time. And then he goes to Minnesota, and in a different scheme and with different techniques and what have you, he really, really struggled. He had a rough end of the year, especially, and in the playoff games. So that he gave up the third highest pressure rate, the fourth most sacks amongst left tackles, and the last couple games down towards the end of the stretch and in the playoffs for the Vikings, he really struggled. But I can discount that, and almost like you do with baseball players, you kind of look at, okay, what has he been through the duration of his career? He's a more affordable version of Laremy Tunsil in a lot of ways. He's going to give you a good, solid work, a lesser version, because he's not as good a pass protector as Laremy Tunsil, but he's a better pass protector than he is a run blocker. But you got him on a one-year deal up to $14 million. Mm-hmm. So I feel good about the signing still, and I think he's going to play better than he did in Minnesota last year. Remember, that was an in-season trade.
Yes.
So he got yoinked up and thrown into a different pond, and he just did not acclimate well.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you here on a Monday. We got a lot of acknowledgments from this week, and let's get to it. You can text in 713-572-4610. That's the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. You listen to the show, you know how this works. We've got a list of people, programs, teams, things that we're going to acknowledge from over the weekend. I will state who that person or thing is. Ben will hit the Roman Reigns sounder.
Acknowledge me!
We will acknowledge that person or people. Let's start. We've got to start at the top this week. The University of Houston Cougars.
Acknowledge me!
On their way to the program's seventh Final Four, they just annihilate Tennessee yesterday. kind of played with him, man, just like a cat just batting a mouse around a little bit. Tennessee crept back into the game at various times, got to within 10 or 12 points, and especially late in the game, each time they got back into what felt like striking distance, or at least compared to what it had been all day long, striking distance. Emmanuel, I'm going to give Emmanuel Sharp an acknowledgement, Ben.
Acknowledge me!
Three threes down the stretch to push the lead back to 13, 14, and 18 points. This is a really, really mature team. It's a team that can actually score a little bit more than some of Kelvin Sampson's previous teams. This was, I thought, a great quote from Sampson about the culture of the program. This is from an interview he did with Will Kunkel of Fox 26. And just talking about the kids he has in the program, the buy-in that he gets. It's not for everybody. He says if you don't want problems in your program, don't recruit problems.
I learned a long time ago, Will, if you don't want problems, don't recruit them. I don't recruit entitlement kids. There's no way that I recruit a kid unless I know that he'll buy in to the way we do things here. But because of the success of this program, every kid that we're recruiting knows exactly what it is he's getting into. You know, they research us as much as we research them.
I thought that was great.
And yeah, that sounds like a shot at Cooper Flagg, personally.
Entitled
Dukey, forward for Duke.
The whole team.
It's all the rage, yeah.
Yep.
Classic Duke hateable player.
So my question is, and you know what, by the way, quick secondary acknowledgement to the committee.
Acknowledge me!
They got the seeding right. I mean, seven of the eight teams that were playing over the weekend in the Elite Eight were one or two seeds. Texas Tech was a three seed. Like, they had this thing nailed when it came to the seeding. For the first time since 2008, all four number one seeds are going to be playing in the Final Four. So you got marquee matchups here. You have big marquee matchups.
I'd say you gotta acknowledge Milos Uzan as well for
acknowledge me.
Acknowledge him. Yeah. For the play on Friday night.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The inbound play. That was sweet, man. That was sweet. My question, if you're a person who said that no Cinderellas in the Sweet 16 or beyond is the death of the tournament, there were people out there who said that. Stephen A. Smith, most notably, but there have been a lot of others. No Cinderellas. It's all favorites. It's all chalk. So I'm assuming you don't watch this weekend then. If no Cinderellas mean that this tournament should or will go die, that if we're getting the complete opposite of that, which is the four best teams in college basketball, that this is a turnoff to you, that you're not going to watch it. Is that right?
No, yeah, the Stephen A. Smith, that's where the old sports journalist in him ebbed through, because sports writers are the worst, because he started off as a sports writer, and they mistake things that they like to write about with things that the fans actually care about.
Yes.
And they love when they can write some article about a Cinderella that they think is going to win them a sports Pulitzer or something.
Yep.
So very, very, very selfish of the sports writers like Stephen A. Smith.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm guessing he's going to watch this weekend coming up. Houston.
He's got to train for a fight.
He's... with LeBron.
Yeah. Yeah. He assures us that there's a video floating around of him not looking all that great, taking a boxing lesson or something.
Really?
He says he's improved his skills.
Okay,
since then.
I've not
I think
seen
LeBron,
that.
LeBron, to all I know is LeBron tweeted out some funny video of Stephen A. Smith looking kind of haphazard and lost.
Oh, really?
But Stephen A. Smith then on his radio show assured everybody that he's been training and he's not that guy anymore. Yeah.
Are you surprised that LeBron is kind of punching down in this whole thing and hanging out in the muck with Stephen A. Smith at all?
No, I think it's exactly what he wants. Yeah. I see people writing stories about how, well, LeBron's got to realize that he's given Stephen A. Smith exactly what he wants.
Like, he knows.
Yeah, and this is exactly what LeBron... Oh, I forgot. LeBron, who shirks attention in the spotlight, that he doesn't probably realize exactly what he's getting into. LeBron could have had that conversation with Stephen A. Smith about his son in an infinite number of places that weren't courtside in an NBA game.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just surprised he's keeping it going as much as he is. But in season, but maybe I'm off base on that. Lance McCullers,
acknowledge me.
35 pitches in a AAA game on Sunday, struck out the side in the first inning, ended up giving up two hits and two runs in a couple of innings. Hit 95 on the gun. I think there's more to be encouraged about there, Seth, than there is to be discouraged about. Admittedly, I only saw the highlights of the three strikeouts. I'm assuming that when he gave up two hits and two runs, that he was working on things.
Yes.
You know, that's what we do. When things are bad in meaningless games for pitchers, they're working on things. When they're good, we're like, this is the greatest thing ever.
Well, and especially in their minor league appearances, they don't really do a scouting report on the batters either. So they're working on stuff and with zero real knowledge of most of the guys they're facing. Just the fact, as long as, with Lance, as it always is, it's not the performance itself. It's what do we hear in the next 3 days afterwards.
Yeah.
And whether there's any discomfort or setback or anything else like that. Yep. So we're, if we get to tomorrow and we haven't heard about a setback or something, I'm going to be optimistic about it. You talk about hitting 95 on the gun, though, too. Hunter Brown in his first three pitches the other night, that was fun. Because he went 97, 98, 99.
Oh.
And then he threw one of his fastest pitches of the night in the last inning he was in there.
Good,
too.
That's what like, I wanted
to
hear.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no, he kept it up. Yeah. It was pretty damn cool.
Yep. The Yankees torpedo bat.
Acknowledge me!
And as it turns out, it's not just the Yankees using it. Several teams are. But the Yankees used it to the most noteworthy performance of the weekend. 9 home runs in a game against the Brewers, including 3 home runs on the first 3 pitches of the game against their former teammate, Nestor Cortez. But if you haven't seen this yet, the Yankees and some other teams are using a bat they call the torpedo bat because of the aesthetics of it. It's got a torpedo look to it. The mass of wood they've kind of moved around inside the barrel of the bat to be more near the sweet spot of where guys hit the ball. And at least for a few Yankees this weekend, it worked out pretty well. They had 15 home runs in the first 3 games of the season.
I'm more angry that initially I thought, oh, this must be the Yankees cheating. And then you find out really quickly, like, no, it's not cheating at all. Any team could have done this in the past 50 years of baseball or whenever they would have like started really looking into and figuring this stuff out. And I'm surprised that people haven't done it before. I'm kind of perturbed that the bat has been around since 2022 and some organizations have messed with it. A lot of major league players tried it but didn't like it, so they haven't used it. But there's at least 4 or 5 teams right now where there's major league ball players using the torpedo bat. I feel like, as you pointed out earlier, an earlier version of the Astros would have been all over this.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe they'd have 5 guys on their roster already using the bat.
Yeah, Luno got fired 2 months before the sport had to take a break from COVID.
Yeah.
I feel like if Luno were still employed by the Astros, that would have been his spare time project during COVID. You know, they can't do anything baseball. There's no baseball to watch or play or coach or GM. GM. So he would have sat around inventing a torpedo bat back in 2020.
I think the big thing is with the Yankees, let's remember, okay, hitting home runs in the regular season, they have no issue with that. And 3 of those home runs did come by via Aaron Judge, who is playing with a normal bat. So Aaron Judge is good with or without a missile bat in the regular season, of course. Awful in the postseason.
Yeah.
The only thing I don't like about it, even though it's completely within the rules, is it almost feels like if in football people just started using those Nerf Sonic balls, the ones that anybody can throw 70 yards.
It has like the little blade hanging out the back of it for aerodynamics. Yeah.
Yeah, whatever those are called. Text line, help me out with this. What are those balls that you can throw forever? They're fun to play with, but it feels, I don't know, the purist in me feels like, all right, just play with the same damn bats people have been playing with for the last 100 some years.
We'll see. I don't know if they're going to do something about it or not.
I bet teams maybe have identified that there might also be a weakness in those bats.
Maybe.
That maybe there's some, I don't know, that maybe certain pitches, you know, pitching inside on a guy, if the weight is shifted more towards the head of the bat, that maybe it's harder to get around on stuff inside. Who knows?
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, maybe it was a give and a take. Alex Bregman.
Acknowledge me!
Didn't do anything great for the Red Sox the first few weeks, except for this. The reason I'm acknowledging Alex Bregman is for something that several of you are requesting on the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. Like, are you guys gonna acknowledge that Rafael Devers sucks right now? Rafael Devers started out the season with a major league record 10 strikeouts in the first 3 games of the year. For the season, he is 0 for 16 with 12 strikeouts, 2 walks, and an RBI. So he has yet to get a hit this season, and I credit Alex Bregman signing with the Red Sox, taking over his role at third base and forcing Rafael Devers to do something that he said very succinctly
no,
he will not do, which is DH full time. I think Alex Bregman's signing with the Red Sox has ruined Rafael Devers. Good job, Bregman.
We got to start looking for some of the clips coming out of Boston. I might have to listen to Boston radio this morning.
Yeah.
Or at least I'll look at their social media feed. They probably got some good hot
takes. They're good about putting clips up on stuff like this. Yeah.
In the post game. Hey, Rafael, have you enjoyed being a DH?
No.
No.
Do you think, are you going to get a hit today?
No.
Tomorrow?
No.
The next day?
No.
Yeah, you're not. You're 0 for, hey, you're on pace Alex to go 0 for the season.
How is Alex Bregman's leadership helped out your team so far?
No.
What's their record so far? I haven't even looked. I just look at Bregman's stats.
Yeah. Well, both Bregman and Kyle Tucker are now hitting .250 on the season.
Okay.
So Tucker started off real slow, but over the weekend he had, five RBIs and a couple homers. Homers and successive nights on Saturday and Sunday. The Red Sox are 1-3, though.
1-3, so, okay.
Bregman's veteran leadership not doing a damn thing for
him. Well, they're one game better than the team Alex Bregman was on last year at that stage. The Astros started 0-4 last year. So
that's old news, Sean.
It's an improvement.
That's ancient history.
Oh, it is. The Astros are 2-1 now. You know what? To Astros, I'll give you a quick one here.
Acknowledge
2-1
me!
2-1 to start the season. We'll take it. Hannah McNair.
Acknowledge me.
Amy Adams is tapping out of the Oiler uniforms for the upcoming season. Perhaps the ridicule from Hannah McNair and the out-and-out thrashing of the Titans when they wear those uniforms by the Houston Texans was the reason why. But the Titans announced new uniforms this week, Seth, and their main color is going to be, quote, Titan blue.
Yeah.
Not Columbia blue anymore. It's Titan blue. Not H-Town blue, it's Titan blue.
But Titan blue is that dark blue?
No. Titan blue is the sky blue.
Is the actual light blue?
Yes.
Okay, I was very confused about this because a lot of the pictures they showed him wearing that darker colored uniform.
Yeah, that's the old one, yeah.
It's the same as the H-Town blue, is their Titan blue.
Close to it, yeah. I'm guessing there's some pixel, you know.
So how is that? Okay, this is why I was confused. So how is that bowing out?
Oh, well, they're not going to wear the Oiler uniforms this coming season. Yeah,
so but they are going to have the H-Town. I still feel a little peeved about it, though.
But they got
rid of... They're still wearing the H-Town blue.
But we know that Amy Adams, the best day of the year for her was the day that those Oiler uniforms were taken out of mothballs.
It would be one thing if they wore it as a throwback, but they specifically looked at the Houston Texans as a team to play. You wear them,
yeah.
So now they'll just always be wearing their Titan blue.
Their Titan blue, but they tapped out for at least a year. They tapped out of the Oiler blue. I credit in part Hannah McNair for that. The other part I credit Amy Adams, probably looking around Nashville and going, "Wow, I'm the only one that really cares about these uniforms. This is my own personal cosplay party." Let's see, we got time here. Brock Purdy,
acknowledge me.
This was a funny clip. And I might give Brock Purdy his $60 million bag just based on this. This is Brock Purdy doing an interview, and he was asked, when did you realize your rookie year in 2022 that as the seventh round Mr. Irrelevant, that you might actually end up being the starter for this team?
During camp and stuff, all the competitions were going on, and Trey was the guy, but like with Nate Sudfeld and I, and we're competing, and I knew that I could like rip the ball and going up against like some dudes that I'd watched growing up on the practice field and then in preseason games. So that sort of gave me some confidence, like, okay, I can do this thing. I don't know how it's going to go down because there's guys in front of me with Trey Lance and then later Jimmy Garoppolo joined again. But once Jimmy became the starter, I was like, I might get some playing time this year, man. I just don't know when.
Just threw Jimmy Garoppolo right under the bus and backed over him again.
That was the weird year where Jimmy Garoppolo was training on his own during training camp, right?
Okay.
Because they were trying to trade him, if I remember properly.
Well, they had made the trade for... Yeah, I mean, that was the second training camp that Trey Lance was there for, so yeah.
Right, and Jimmy Garoppolo was on the outs with the organization, and they were going to try to trade Jimmy Garoppolo. So he was working out at the facility, but separate from the team.
And then ended up playing.
They ended up playing him, and apparently he was so bad that Purdy knew he was going to get a chance.
Mr. Irrelevant knew he was going to get a shot at some point. That was really good.
You don't hear a lot of former Garoppolo teammates really rushing to his defense.
Nope.
Danny Amendola just flat out basically accused him of just not being a man. Remember?
Yeah. I do. Yeah, not a popular guy, I'm guessing. Stephen A. Smith.
Acknowledge
he is ready
me.
For his run in politics. I think we talked about this clip last week, but we didn't play it. This is Stephen A. Smith talking about... They were talking about Arkansas and John Calipari and Calipari's team making a run to the Sweet 16. Obviously, Nolan Richardson, longtime great Arkansas coach who won a national championship there back in the mid-90s. This was Stephen A. Smith talking about Calipari and invoking the name of Nolan Richardson.
It's the NCAA tournament, so anything could happen in a one-game scenario. So, of course, he'll have a chance. And, of course, he'll have his teams in the tournament. Of course, he's going to be able to recruit better than anybody ever has there outside of Mr. 40 Minutes of Hell himself, the late, great Nolan Richardson, God rest his soul. But in the same breath, if anybody can compete with that and bring a national program back to Arkansas, it is John Calipari.
Okay, so that was the late, great Nolan Richardson, God rest his soul. Nolan Richardson is still alive.
And, oh, no.
And apparently, I'm guessing during a break in First Take, someone told Stephen A. that, hey, man, you just said, you just put late, great on Nolan Richardson and told God to rest his soul, which last we checked is still alive.
That was the part where I knew that he defended and said that he knew that Nolan Richards was still alive. Like, if it were done humorously, the late great or whatever, it was when he added God rest his soul.
Yeah.
Here's
Stephen A. claiming he knew that Nolan Richardson is still alive.
Oh, by the way, before we even begin the show, I just want to make sure I am fully aware that Nolan Richardson is alive. Okay.
I
apologize for that. I don't know why I said God rest his soul. I know he's alive. I've always known that. So I just wanted to make sure I made that clear, Molly, before we moved on to the show. I don't want anybody thinking I thought the man was gone. I did not. I know he's alive. I'm sorry.
I actually didn't even hear you said that. But right. Important. You cleared that up. Yeah. Thank you.
I didn't realize I said
Molly.
It.
Pay attention. He said it. You're right. I thought
he should have just apologized. Yeah.
I thought the same thing.
Yeah.
As you just said, like when the late great, that feels like something you just colloquially throw in. When you say God rest his soul, there's purposefulness with that. There's intentionality with that.
As somebody who commonly makes mistakes such as this, I think that Stephen A. Smith in his explanation was there's some validity to that. I think consciously, if he had thought about it, he knows that Nolan Richardson is alive. But for whatever reason, in the moment when he was in the flow, he transposed Nolan
soul?
Richardson with somebody else.
God
or whatever.
Rest his soul is a weird thing to toss in at the end if you know somebody's alive.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. Consciously, he knows he's alive, but like for whatever reason in his mind, he switched him up with somebody else.
Oh, I got you. I got you.
He just in that moment, he had a mental glitch.
I got you.
And he just forgot or confused him with somebody else.
So you empathize with Stephen A. on this one?
Yes,
here.
I do.
Got you.
But as the old saying goes, never ruin an apology with an explanation.
Yeah.
He just should have said, "I'm sorry. Obviously, you're very alive and kicking."
Yeah.
Yep.
Wonder who
played wiffle ball with him last weekend.
Wonder who he may have gotten him mixed up with, too. That would have been interesting. I've always known that was the best part of Stephen A. Someone said that on the text page. I've always known that he's alive.
I've always known that he was alive.
What
say
are we
that
doing?
About anybody who's alive.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He's been alive the entire time I've known him.
That's
I'll tell you that much.
That's right.
Yeah.
Someone's asking, why didn't Cam Smith play in the Saturday game, the third game of the series? I'm guessing they're easing him in. It might have been matchups.
Well,
I don't know.
Yeah, and they got to get Chaz, his reps and get him out there.
DeZenzo.
So I think I think they're trying. And DeZenzo, that was the big thing that we thought that both DeZenzo and Cam Smith wouldn't make the team was because Espada really wants guys to play as much as possible to stay sharp and improve, especially for the younger guys. So I think you're gonna see that all year long. And then especially you saw the defensive substitutions when they have a lead and Espada trusts his relief pitchers. He's going to stick Chaz out there.
Yep.
When they're in any type of a save situation
at the end
of the game.
No doubt. All right. Mock draft injection time. That was acknowledge me. We do that every Monday. Mock draft injection we do every day leading up to the draft. We are under 4 weeks from the draft. Fun wrinkle in this one here involving a team not named the Texans. We'll let you hear who Eric Edholm, who's one of the foremost draft experts, NFL.com. We'll let you know who he's got the Texans taking. Got some good draft chatter coming up next.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like filling out basketball brackets. Too many choices, too much noise, and no one wants a busted budget. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break down real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Make smarter financial plays today. No luck required. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige. Ooh. In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth-shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 45% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Karam Injury Lawyers Studios. Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, let's get to it. The mock draft injection. By the way, the Texans announced late last week the draft party will be Thursday night, April the 24th, right out there by Discovery Green on the Avenidas right there, right in front of the convention center. That's where they had it last year, but it was on day two on Friday because they had no first round pick.
Yeah.
Be
yeah.
different this year.
It's a good time. It was a really cool setup when, and that was on day two, but there were a bunch of people out there. I'm guessing for day one, it's going to be pretty hyped. And what's your over under on where the Texans pick in the first round?
Okay. Like, do I think they'll stay? I think,
Or I guess I should say, where's their first pick in this draft?
Yeah.
Because it could be in the second round.
Okay. So basically, do they pick before or after the 25th pick in the draft? Do they trade up or down? Do they trade up or down? I am going to say they trade. I want to say they stay at 25 because if they're going to go offensive line, I think there's plenty of prospects there already at 25.
Yeah, that's the only thing I wonder and worry about is that so many people are down on the wide receivers that or one of the other positions where maybe you get a few guys that are all in the power rankings in the top 15 or 20 that slip and teams take offensive linemen that they feel better about.
Okay.
That maybe Nick starts trying to jockey up for position. But it feels like this might be with the rare year where Nick doesn't necessarily move around a lot with his top pick.
With a top pick, yeah. He's done it multiple times where he's moved around with that pick. But I feel like the way things are falling, there's going to be offensive linemen. When you and I do this exercise we're about to do, Seth, the mock draft injection, we do it every day. My first thing I do after seeing who the Texans take is who's left on the board there that they could have taken instead of that player. And more often than not, there's two or three offensive linemen that I think they'd be perfectly comfortable taking it at 25. So maybe that's a case to move back a little bit. You go, there's three or four guys there. We'll move back to 30 or something like that. Pick up an extra third or fourth round pick to do that. So I don't have a great feel for it. I don't have a great answer to that question. So let's hit this. Let's hit this mock. This is Eric Edholm, NFL.com. He's been doing this a long time. He was with Yahoo for a while. He's been doing this a while. He's a good one. With the 25th overall pick in the Eric Edholm NFL.com mock draft, the Houston Texans select Kelvin Banks Jr., offensive lineman, University of Texas. He says this, I thought about putting Gray Zabel, North Dakota State, here, but Texans GM Nick Caserio has used his high picks on Power 4 prospects. Good for you, Eric Edholm. Not a lot of national guys acknowledge that that Casario has been practically exclusively power schools since he got here. Banks checks that box, and he could be prepped to start at guard in year one before potentially kicking out to tackle later. One of Banks' best games at Texas came as a freshman. You pointed this out many times, Seth. Against Will Anderson Jr., a tape Casario surely watched.
Yeah, and Kelvin Banks is interesting because a lot of people are going to think, okay, we want to move him down to guard. There's other teams that might be looking at him as a tackle. I think that the good thing about him, and given what would give something Texans fans to feel good about, is that he gets after it in the run game. Mm-hmm. He really gets after it in the run game. As a pass protector, there's some things about him that I want to say, I don't know if it's the right word, passive sounds too loaded, but there's times where I think he's a little too passive in letting the defender come to him on the edge, but he's already demonstrated that he's got a toughness and grittiness to him in the run game, so I don't worry that he lacks the ability to have that style of game. I think it's more technique and maturation and everything else like that. So he does a lot of stuff really, really well, and obviously he played very well in college, so I'd feel great about him, whether they wanted to start him out at guard or tackle. I think he's got a lot of upside in both those areas. The fact that he genuinely seems to care about run blocking is nice, but obviously pass blocking is the biggest concern ultimately when you take a guy in the first round.
Yeah, the two offensive linemen still on the board at this pick that have been mocked to the Texans multiple times are Zabal and Josh Simmons, who's the offensive lineman from Ohio State who's recovering from a patellar injury and possible maturity issues.
Yeah, Zabal versus Josh Simmons, both of those guys would have huge red flags depending on what your flavor of red flag is. And with Josh Simmons, he's coming off of a patellar tendon injury, and it's dicey. It's like Achilles tendons used to be before they got better at making them, but there's not a great long history of guys coming back and being as good after patella tendon tears. The other is just some of that smoke about whether he might lack maturity or swarm mentality or whatever that. With Zabel, I mean, so much of it is really just that he played all four positions. He played four different positions in college, but most of his film is as a tackle. So you're projecting him as an interior offensive lineman, and he hasn't done that against SEC caliber or Power 5 conference caliber players other than at the Senior Bowl. I think early on with Zabel, I had a little bit of a grudge against him just because I felt like people were a little too excited about his Senior Bowl performance. I just saw all these people gushing about it, and then when I watched it, I thought, all right, this is not as it was described to me on Twitter. It wasn't dominating, but he did some things really, really well with his feet. He's just got to clean his hands up, but for a guy that is, you know, playing center and guard and tackle during the Senior Bowl, I felt like there were a lot of good instances where he used his hands really well, that the sloppiness doesn't concern me as much. So I've really come around on him. Mm-hmm. I wanted to dislike him just because I get tired of people gushing about Senior Bowl performances, but there's definitely something there. He has a body control and an athleticism in his lower body that not a lot of interior offensive linemen have.
Text message, Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. Texans move up to 21 to snag Matthew Golden. I'll say this, in this particular mock draft, Golden is there at 23. He ends up going to the Packers at 23. Now that I could see, it does feel like this receiver class is kind of, if we buy into the mock drafts as some version of a stock market, Seth, it does feel like there is a thinning of wide receivers that teams are looking at as surefire first-round picks. The ordinariness of Ibuka is starting to show itself, where some of these experts are starting to mock him more of like a second-round guy. Luther Burden III, it sounds like there may be concerns. You know, the Bob McGinn had that quote about his mom's a concern, his girlfriend's his manager. Whatever reason, Luther Burden III is not showing up in the first round in as many of these. The McMillan kid from Arizona is still a first-rounder, but he's been fluctuating from anywhere in the top 10 to being there for the Texans at 25. Golden is the one, ironically, with the last name Golden, he's the one that seems to be rising up boards here, not being there at 25. Depending on how Nick Casario feels about this receiver class and how big the drop-off is from, say, Matthew Golden to that next group of wide receivers, that I could see, like if Golden starts to fall into that area in the teens somewhere where you got a little extra money in your pocket from the Laremy Tunsil trade, you move up and go get Matthew Golden with that first pick, and then you still have some day two picks to address offensive line with guys that may not have elite traits, but they've got the chance to come in and be worthwhile starters for your team.
Let me do this, Sean.
Yeah.
Since we're talking about people sliding, sometimes at various, like the guys that are projected to go high but play positions that don't always go that high, I always like to look at those guys as, man, sometimes if they slip out of the top 15, there's teams that are more desperate that are specifically maybe targeting certain players, and like sometimes those good players slip way more than they should.
Yeah.
Okay, if I had to give you the choice, if these guys all three somehow slid all the way down, okay. Tyler Warren,
yep.
The tight end.
Yep.
Ashton Jeanty, the running back.
Yep.
And then let's give you, I'm not going to say Loveland, the tight end, because I don't think that would be as big a shock if he slid.
No.
Let's say, that's those
Will,
are the two
Will,
that I
Will
think.
Will Campbell? That, what about Will?
Oh, Will Campbell. That seems like an atypical slide, though, because he's an offensive tackle. But let's say Will Campbell.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Like, Will Campbell with, oh boy. Tyler Warren. I love Jeanty, but there's a lot of running backs. You can get a running back on day two or day three in this draft, I think. Jeanty would be fun. Jeanty,
I know.
No, and I'm someone who has, I've put it out there before that I would love Jeanty. You putting Tyler Warren into this conversation, though, is...
That messes things up.
Yeah. You know what? I'm going to say Tyler Warren, even with Will Campbell there. For the moment, I'm going to get upset about his tiny little alligator arms that are 3/8 of an inch shorter than the standard. Yeah.
Daniel Jeremiah had a good explanation of that on Rich Eisen. He said that this is how it goes. You're going to have three different sets of measurements on guys from their pro day, from the Senior Bowl, from the combine, from the whatever. And how it usually works is if you really, really like Will Campbell, oh, yeah, he's got 33-inch arms or whatever the long measurement is. Yeah. If you don't like him, like, nope, we measured him at 27. And so it's...
Yeah, it's like the pitchers in spring training. He sucks. No, he's working on things, you know?
Honestly, the measurements, and I'd include in this the vertical, the way they measure the stuff, like your reach at the beginning, guys will pinch their shoulder blades together to make their arms look shorter on the vertical so that, because then they just do the math from where you hit on the apex versus where they measure you. It's so unscientific.
Dude.
It's such bogus garbage.
Yeah. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Monday. Hope you had a great weekend. All right. I just saw something on TV in the studio here, and now I hate these torpedo bats. Hate
oh, no.
The torpedo bats. I'll tell you why coming up next.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Some people follow the rules, I break them. I'm Soraya, and on Rule Breakers, we talk to the rebels who do things their way. Listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.